This Is Your Life, episode 39. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about the 7 benefits of keeping a journal. Plus, I'll share with you my own practice and also provide you with a few tips. So whether you've never journaled, need a little motivation to keep going, or are just curious about what others do, I think you'll find this episode helpful. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. You can find more at platformuniversity.com, and I'll be telling you a little bit more about it at the end of the podcast, so stay tuned. So let's get right into this episode. Between blog posts, podcast show prep, courses, speeches, books, I typically write several thousand words a week. However, I've never been a consistent journaler until just recently. I tried. I had friends who swore by it. It just never worked for me until recently. My wife Gail and I were on a vacation last summer, and we were tucked away in the mountains of East Tennessee on the edge of a beautiful lake. And when we arrived, Gail challenged me to keep a journal. And honestly, I rolled my eyes. I'd tried it before. It didn't work, but I reluctantly, she didn't really give me much choice. I agreed to give it another try, evidently forgetting a previous post I had written on the difference between trying and doing. But so far, amazingly, even to my own surprise, I've written almost daily for more than 6 months, and I'm still loving it. I can't imagine not journaling. And look, there are 1,000 different ways to keep a journal. Some people keep a spiritual journal. Others keep a simple diary of events. Some people write in the morning. Others write at night. Some people write inside a paper journal. Others use their computer. All I can tell you is how journaling is working for me. There's lots of different ways to do this. You've got to find the way that works the best for you. But here's how it works for me. I typically get up at 5 a.m., I spend usually the first 15 minutes in quiet and stillness. Then I spend the next 15 minutes in prayer, and I spend 15 minutes reading my Bible, and then I spend about 15 minutes journaling. And I've documented that in a previous episode of this podcast called Reengineering Your Morning Ritual, and I'll have a link in the show notes to that. But I might write about what I read in my Bible. I might write about a dream I had last night, an experience I had yesterday, or what I hope to accomplish today. Sometimes all of that. But sometimes I'll write on one topic, sometimes 4 or 5. It really doesn't matter. But the main thing is I'm writing for myself rather than an audience. And I found this tremendously liberating and deeply satisfying. And amazingly, I am effortlessly writing 500 to 1,000 words a day now. But if I had to sum it up, I would say that journaling has afforded me 7 benefits. And these are what I want to share with you in today's episode in the hopes of motivating you to start journaling or to keep going if you're about to quit. And here's what they are. So here's the 7 benefits. Number one, process previous events. This is something that journaling allows me to do. You know, what happens to me is not as important as the meaning I assign to what happens to me. And we talked about this in last week's episode where we talked about change your story, change your life. There's what happens to you, and then there's how you interpret what happens to you. And that interpretation, in large part, determines whether you're going to succeed at life or fail at life, whether you're going to continue to move the ball forward or whether you're going to get stuck and not move it forward. But journaling helps me sort through my experience and be intentional about my interpretation because I get to be the architect or the engineer of the memory. And I can choose to focus on certain aspects of that experience, or I can focus on completely different aspects of that experience. And if I'm conscious, if I'm aware, if I'm intentional, I can quickly see that some parts of that experience will be negative, some parts of will be positive, and I get to choose on what I focus on. This is why, by the way, people can have the same experience and have completely different stories about what happened because they're choosing to focus on different aspects of the story. So the number one benefit to me of journaling is it enables me a very simple, very low cost, but effective way to process previous events. That's benefit number one. Benefit number two is to clarify my own thinking. You know, writing in general helps me disentangle my thoughts. And journaling takes it to a whole new level. And because I'm not performing in front of a live audience, so to speak, I can really wrestle through the issues. And sometimes people used to ask me, what do you think about a certain topic? And I would say, well, I don't know because I haven't blogged about it yet. Well, blogging is definitely not the same as journaling, but they're similar in that thoughts disentangle themselves, passing over the lips and through pencil tips. I'm not sure who said that originally, but it's a great quote. And it is certainly true when it comes to journaling. It'll help clarify your thinking. Sometimes I'll have an idea and I'll just work through the process and try to articulate what I'm feeling or what I'm thinking. And this is really even pre-blog. Again, I'm not writing for an audience. I'm writing for myself, but I just need to clarify my thinking. I need to hone it. I need to zero in on what to focus on. And so that's really the second benefit is it helps me clarify my thinking. Third benefit to journaling, though, is to understand the context. Man, life is often happening so quickly. I usually have a little time to stop and reflect on where I am in the bigger story of my life. And honestly, from my perspective as a Christian, the bigger story of the story that God's telling. And sometimes I get caught up in a little story and I miss the broader context. But journaling helps me get that context back. It helps me see what that event meant in the larger context of my life, in the larger flow of events. And journaling helps me to understand the difference between the forest and the trees. And that's very helpful to stay level-headed, to remain calm, to be centered, and journaling helps me get there. Fourth benefit, journaling is a way for me to notice my feelings. Now look, I understand feelings aren't everything, but they're also not nothing. Your feelings are important. You were made, created to be a whole person. Certainly that includes your rational faculties. It includes your will. It includes your spirit or your soul, but it also includes your emotions. And I think our emotions are something that are often a clue to other things that we need to be paying attention to. And so when I journal, I'm able to notice my feelings. And the older I get, the more I try to pay attention to them. They're often an early indicator of something that's brewing. And I'm going to tell you how in just a few minutes how I note this every day so that I don't miss it. And for me, I really denied my emotions for years. I didn't think they were that important. I tried to live above them. And I certainly don't want my emotions to run my life because, like anybody, I'm up and I'm down, but if I pay attention, I can ask what those mean and at least have the opportunity to explore it further if I notice my feelings, which is the fourth benefit. The fifth benefit, journaling provides an opportunity for me to connect with my heart. That's the fifth benefit. I'm not really sure I can explain this one. I talked about the importance of the leader's heart a few episodes ago. But journaling has helped me monitor the condition of my heart. It's really the only time of day when I really have the proactive opportunity to check in and say, how's my heart doing? That part that's the most inner part of me, that part of me that is so often invisible to the external world. We get so focused on image and the outer or external or exterior life that we forget there's a world of activity going on inside of our heart. Solomon said, above all else. I mean, he didn't say, you know, if you get to it, but above all else, number one on your priority list is that you're to guard your heart, Proverbs 4:23. And it's hard to do this when you lose touch with it. So journaling enables me to connect with my heart, not just my emotions, what I'm feeling, but what's spinning around inside of me, inside of my thinking, inside of my heart, the deepest and purest part of me. So number five is connect with my heart. Number six is record significant lessons. I don't know about you, but I'm a better student when I'm taking notes. And so many things happen every day, so many insights, so many lessons that I get that I could learn from if I was only paying attention and writing things down. And writing things down for me leads to deeper understanding, and I hope, and this is really what I'm after, wisdom. I want to write down what I learn so I don't have to relearn it later. And that's kind of the curse that's given to those of us who are slow learners, is that if we don't get it the first time we're exposed to it, we often get another opportunity. And I don't want to be a slow learner. I want to be a fast learner. I want to record the significant lessons, and I want to distill from them the wisdom that'll be useful to me when I get into similar situations in the future. Also, this often becomes a primary source of additional blog posts because this is information that I can share with other people out of my own life. And I find that when I write, whether it's a book, whether it's a blog, or even when I'm speaking, that the most poignant illustrations, the things that really connect with other people, are those lessons that come out of my life. It's not just a history lesson or not something that is just interesting that happened to somebody else, but it's something that I've learned myself in the school of hard knocks, learned it maybe the hard way, but I've learned it for myself and I can speak out of my own experience. There's no authority like that, by the way, but it begins in my journal by recording these significant lessons. Again, not for anybody else, but for myself, but I at least have them recorded in my journal where I can come back to them later if I want to. Number seven, seventh benefit, ask important questions. You know, a journal is not merely a repository for the lessons I'm learning, but also for the questions I'm asking. Not every question is answered now. Everything doesn't have to be tied up with a bow and put into my journal as though I've got all the answers. If there's one thing I've discovered, it's the quality of my questions that determine the quality of my answers. One of the better ways to get better answers to life's questions is to articulate better questions. And so this is a place where I can do that in my journal, is just to write the question. I don't feel compelled to give an answer now. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But to at least put the questions there so I can mull over them, think about them through the day and through the week, and eventually come back to them with an answer. So again, seven benefits to keeping a journal. But I also want to provide some practical help in actually getting started. And when I started journaling, and again, I just want to emphasize, I'm pretty much a novice. I've only been doing this for a little over 6 months, but I have been doing it steadily. And sometimes I think we can report best when we're newest to a task and the new hasn't rubbed off and we still know what it takes to succeed or get started. But when I started journaling, I did it the old-fashioned way. I kept my journal in a physical notebook, and I happened to use an Echo Systems journal, ECO Systems journal, and I'll provide a link in the show notes if you want to go that route. But I'm not the best at writing lots of text by hand. You know, that's just me. The legibility, my writing deteriorates quickly. I'm much better in a computer. So on day three of my journaling experience, I stumbled upon a software program called Day One. And I think, unfortunately, this is only a Mac program, but it's a beautiful, minimalist writing tool that reminds me a lot of Byword, which is the program I use to do most of my blog writing. But here's what I like about Day One, if you want to consider this as an alternative or as an option for your daily journaling. It provides a simple, uncluttered writing area. Again, it's a minimalist kind of writing tool, so there's not a lot of clutter, not a lot of options, there's not a lot you can do except write. It also has iCloud and Dropbox synchronization so that you've got your journal wherever you are, whether it's with your iPad, your iPhone, or on your desktop. I like that as well. It also offers password protection. Though not encryption yet, it at least has password protection so that somebody would have to make a really huge effort to get at your journal to find out what's inside. It also offers a calendar view, which allows you to jump quickly to a specific day. And this is a little bit geeky, but it offers multi-markdown support, which is a formatting language I've grown dependent on and use in Byword, but that may mean nothing to you. But if you're a little bit of a geek, maybe that would be a helpful benefit. It also provides a fast, intuitive search engine that allows me to retrieve my notes instantly. And best of all, it's only $4.99, and it's really a beautifully designed program. And if I'm not mistaken, I think in the App Store on the Mac, it was voted as the number one application for download last year in 2012. Can't remember if that was exactly what it got, but it did get a lot of honors and recommendation in the Mac world. Well, about a month ago, I started using Evernote for my journaling. And I'm sure some of you are thinking, as I was describing day one and knowing that I'm an Evernote fan, you were thinking, why don't you just use Evernote, you big dummy? And a lot of people said that to me, actually, when I wrote a post about this and talked about using day one. They said, why don't you just use Evernote? Well, finally, I saw the wisdom of it. It makes all my journal entries readily available when I search for a topic inside of Evernote. And for me, Evernote is my digital brain. Anything worth remembering, anything worth keeping, for me, goes into Evernote. So that means meeting notes. It means web clips. It means projects that I'm working on, whatever. But when I search for a topic inside of Evernote, if my journal's there, it makes those notes available for blog posts, speeches, books, other stuff where I may reuse that content later. Now, to be honest, one disadvantage you should be aware of if you decide to go the Evernote route, keeping your journal in Evernote is less secure than day one. Yes, you can encrypt selected text in Evernote, but you can't encrypt an entire notebook. And I really, really wish that Evernote would provide this functionality. People have been requesting it for years, myself included, and I think this is something that they should add. But in addition to using Evernote, I've created a journal template in Evernote, and I have lots of templates in Evernote, and I tag them all with a exclamation point template tag, which means it sorts at the top of my tag list. But I have a link in the show notes to my journal template, so you can see what that looks like if you're interested. I also happen to use an Apple script, which I know is a little bit geeky, but to copy the template automatically into a new note in Evernote. But let me explain how I set up a journal entry in Evernote. And again, this will apply to a lot of different kinds of software, but if you're keen on using Evernote, maybe this will save you a few steps or at least give you some ideas that you can improve upon. And if you do improve it, by the way, I'd be grateful if you'd leave a comment in the show notes so that I can learn from you as well. But the first thing I do is I title the note first with the date. For example, 2013-01-30. That was my entry for the day of this podcast. Then a hyphen, then the words journal entry, another hyphen, and the day of the week. Now, under that, I list four pieces of information that I track every single day. Maybe you're going to have six, maybe you're going to have none, but for me, I just thought it would be cool to track this every single day. So I track the scripture passages that I've read from the Bible, and I typically read four, one from the Old Testament, one from the New Testament, Psalms and Proverbs, because I read through the Bible in a year, and I'm on a plan, the Tyndale one-year Bible that enables me to do that by reading four passages every day. It's really kind of cool. Then I track my location. Wherever I am at the time, I'm writing my journal. I think this will be interesting to me as I'm looking back on this years from now, to know that I was in Franklin, Tennessee, or I was in Orlando, Florida, or, you know, I was somewhere in Scotland. I mean, I don't know where it would be, but that also is a context kind of thing that I know is going to influence how I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what I'm experiencing, and what I'm writing about in my journal for that day. Then I also note the weather. I don't know, maybe I'm just a weather geek. This may seem totally silly to you, but I keep track of this. So I keep track of the temperature and what the conditions are outside. You know, is it raining? Is it snowing? Is it warm? Is it cold? Whatever. So just the weather. And then the last thing I track here, a piece of information I track every day, is my emotions. And remember, I talked about this as one of the benefits earlier, but this forces me to stop and notice how I'm feeling. And it also teaches me to be precise in how I assess and articulate my emotions. Gail and I noticed this a few months ago, that we tend to use this extreme language, like, you know, well, how was your day, honey? Oh, it was horrible. Well, you know, a horrible day is when your spouse is in a car wreck. You know, a horrible day is when a child dies. You know, a horrible day is when you lose your job. So, you know, do we really have to use that extreme language to talk about what happened? Don't we have more words in our vocabulary that we can invoke to give us a broader range of experiences and be more precise in how we assess our emotions? So there's a difference, for example, for me, between being tired, being a little down, being sad, and being full out depressed. Or conversely, being confident, or expectant, or joyful, or excited. So I'm kind of enjoying exploring those different emotions and trying to be precise in describing how I'm feeling. But just to notice this. So after I've entered in those four bits of information, then I just write. Usually I begin with a review of the previous day. I talk about the significant events, what they meant to me, whether something confused me, or maybe I pose a question, or I don't feel the need to tie up everything in a bow. Maybe there's a lot of loose ends. And when I move on to a new subject, again, this is inside of Evernote, I insert a horizontal line in Evernote, and then I just go on to the next subject. I don't try to worry about transitions. I'm not writing this for public consumption. These are just my notes on what happened the previous day. Now, after I debrief on the previous day, I usually write a little bit about what I've got planned for today and what I hope to accomplish. If I'm excited about something, I say so. If I'm dreading something, I note that too. And I also ask myself, why am I dreading that? I try to get to the bottom of that usually. But all of that happens in about 15 minutes. I typically write for 15 minutes. Sometimes I go less, rarely more, because like you, I'm busy. I've got a lot of other activities that have to happen during the day. And I find that if I make it too big of an assignment, too big of a task, then I just put it off and I don't get to it. But I can stay at it for 15 minutes. Now, occasionally for me, I'll go back and I'll read several days' entries so I can get some context and perspective. And that all by itself is an amazing exercise. It's one of the great benefits, again, of journaling, it giving you this context. But that's pretty much it. I really try to keep it simple, and I recommend you do too. Don't get caught up in the debate about which tool to use, for example. The tool, whether you use a paper journal or a digital one, is really not that important. The main thing is to do something that's easy, something that for you becomes invisible, so you can focus on writing and reflecting and not how to get those ideas out of your head and onto the page. The most important thing of all is just to start. You know, if you start, you'll figure it out. This is not complicated. People have been doing this for hundreds and thousands of years. It's not that complicated. So with that, let's get to some listener questions. And I just have to say that I got a ton of questions this week on this particular topic, and I'll do my best to fit yours in. If I didn't get to yours, I hope you're not disappointed. There were a lot of common themes, and I just tried to find one that was representative of that theme and use that one. So the first one comes from Aaron Johnson.
This is Aaron Johnson from Denver, Colorado. My wife and I profile hikes at dayhikesneardenver.com. Michael, I'm an avid journaler, but I've talked with many people who say that it just doesn't work for them. Are there some alternative ways that this kind of person could engage in the important task of self-reflection?
Well, the only alternative I know of, Aaron, would probably be counseling. You know, I found huge value in that personally, but it gives you an opportunity to talk things out and have somebody who's a friendly listening ear that can give you perspective. But honestly, it's expensive, at least compared to journaling. And when I'm trying to talk someone into journaling, I typically focus on the benefits. And then I just challenge them to try it for 21 days. You know, if you can do it for 21 days, you can probably continue it as a habit for life. But I tell them just not to not write for more than 5 minutes when they're starting out. Make it really simple. Make it something that they don't procrastinate. And one of the things that they could do if they haven't done anything else before is just keep a gratitude journal. Give thanks for all things. And Gail's doing this now. And just right before she goes to bed, she writes down two or three things that she was thankful for that day. And maybe that's a way to get your friends off the dime and get them started. Make it something really small that they can actually see themselves accomplishing. Focus on the benefits and tell them they don't have to do this for the rest of their life. But just to make it an experiment, just try it. Try it for 21 days. If it doesn't work, fine. You've tried it. You know one more thing that doesn't work and you can go on with your life. But what if it could transform your life and become an important part of your daily routine? That's how I would sell it if I were talking to some friends. The next question comes from Bud.
Hi, Michael. My name is Bud Brown. I blog at transitionministriesgroup.com. And I've got a question for you about journaling. When you make your journal entries, what process do you use to flag them or to mark them so that in the future, when you find that you need a little lift, you go back and see how God has been at work in your life or how he's bringing about resolution in various areas? Look forward to your answer.
Great question, Bud. And I would just preface this by reminding you and everyone else listening to this podcast that I'm a novice, so I don't have all this stuff figured out yet. But also, again, I keep everything in Evernote. So on normal days, I just create a new note, as I explained earlier in the podcast, and then I tag it with a tag called journal. But third, I consider adding additional tags based on the content. These tags may change in the future, but right now I have 5 tags that are nested under my journal tag in Evernote. And if you use Evernote, you know what I'm talking about. You have, it's got a great feature that allows you to nest tags in a hierarchy of tags so you can keep things kind of organized. But here are some of the additional tags that I consider adding to a particular journal entry. I have a tag called Answered Prayer. I have another tag called Personal Setback. I have another tag called Personal Victory. I have another tag called Open Question. And I have a 5th tag called Important Insight. So if you don't use Evernote, you can come up with your own tagging system based on color coding or something else. But those are just that's just how I make it work with Evernote. And I hope that's at least helpful in stimulating your own thinking. The next question comes from Christopher.
Hi, Michael. My name is Christopher Scott. I'm calling from Turlock, California. I blog at ChristopherScottBlog.com. And my question is, if you have tips or strategies or heard of ways that people catalog what they've journaled about. Often when I journal, you know, I think about years past or when I journaled about something, I sometimes have trouble, you know, finding that date or that time when I wrote about something. So I was just curious if you know of any ways to catalog or keep track of what was written when. Be curious to hear your thoughts, and thanks for your great podcast.
Christopher, this is another great reason to keep a digital journal. Whether it's Day One or Evernote or some other application, you can typically search back through your database of entries using keywords or tags, and that's what I do. But if you're using Evernote, you could actually create a note called Journal Catalog, and inside of it, you could list the date, the topics you covered in that specific journal entry, and you could also create an internal link to that particular entry or that other Evernote note, so you click on it and go immediately to it. This is not something I'm presently doing, but it would certainly work. And, you know, as I think about it, I could see the advantage of it as long as you're up for the little bit of maintenance that it would require to do that. Now, Day One also has the ability to star an entry, so you can get back to all those entries that you starred or favorited. If you use a paper diary, and I used to use this years ago when I used a day planner, you might want to create an index in the first several pages of it and add a summary to each day. And you could just do this at the end of your routine, write your journal entry as normal, flip to the front of the notebook, and then just write a quick summary of what that day was so that you don't have to review the whole journal, but you can review the catalog or the index on the first several pages to get back to the specific entries. So great question. There's a lot of different opportunities, and you can be as creative as you want to be. But again, don't make the system so complex that you dread doing it or it requires so much maintenance that you end up postponing or procrastinating the actual writing, because that's where the juice is, in the writing and in the reflection, not the systematizing, though there's a temptation for those of us that are a little geeky to go there. The next question comes from Lynn.
Hi, Michael. Lynn Morrissey from St. Louis, Missouri. Is journaling scriptural, or should Christians be wary of it as a New Age practice for self-exploration? Thank you.
Honestly, Lynn, I've never had anyone express this concern to me, and maybe it's because I haven't written a book on it, and you have, and so you probably get a lot of questions that I just haven't come to me yet. Maybe I'll get some as a result of this particular podcast, but I did a little research on it, and I would like to refer to you an article by Don Whitney, who is a professor at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and it's called Why Should I Journal? And I've included a link in the show notes. My only complaint with the article is that while he uses Jonathan Edwards as a historical example, he doesn't go back further into church history and discuss people like Augustine, who also kept a journal. But regardless, you might find it helpful. So I just refer you to that article and move on to the next question, which comes from Jackie.
Hi, Michael. It's Jackie Ulmer, and I blog at jackiealmer.com. That's U-L-M-E-R. My question is, I'm really anxious to hear your podcast on journaling. I have journaled for a long time, but I'm wondering if you use it more as a guide to kind of refer back to with kind of more cliff notes, or whether you make it super detailed. So anxious to hear what your response is, and loving Platform University. Thanks so much.
Jackie, this is a great question. It really depends. Largely on how much time I have and how interested I am in the details myself. So some days, if I'm in more of a hurry, I'll just do the Cliff Notes version. And my philosophy is something is better than nothing. But whatever you do, don't let perfectionism invade your journaling space and make you procrastinate writing something. I mean, you can make this so that it's a rock that's so heavy you can't lift it, or it's a task that's so big you never start. So start with the premise, no one will ever see this. This is only for my own benefit. And I think this will free you up to experiment and write at a length that is appropriate for you to be able to reflect on what you want to reflect on and spur your memory later on when you come back to it. So again, just experiment. The next question comes from Jason.
Hi, Michael. My name is Jason Jones, and I blog on the science of motivation and performance at drjasonjones.com. Michael, I'm wondering if there's a benefit of journaling with pen and paper as opposed to electronic journaling via keyboard or voice recording. Electronic journaling seems to have so many benefits like storage and retrieval, yet I've heard that there are studies that say that the kinesthetic process of writing is more beneficial to the brain. I'd love your thoughts on this, and thanks so much for your great work.
Yeah, I've heard this argument too, and it might be true for some people. Maybe it's true for most people, but not if it keeps you from starting. And personally, I would have never stayed with journaling if it required me to use a paper journal. That's just me, because I don't like to write longhand. As I said before, my writing's fairly unintelligible. The only time I write longhand now is when I'm taking notes on my iPad mini in a meeting, because I find that it's less intrusive than actually pulling out a keyboard or typing on the iPad keyboard. But I would say experiment. I don't think there's a cookie cutter solution. Use what works best for you. And don't feel like you have to follow the crowd or legislate to everyone else what they should use just because it works for you. Journaling is a highly personal practice. And if paper works best for you, use it. One of my friends, Lucy Swindoll, is probably the most consistent journaler I've ever met. I mean, she's got, I don't know, dozens, maybe 100 journals, but she's been doing it for decades. Every day she draws in it. She writes in it. She clips things to it. And it's fantastic. But that's not me. And you've got to know yourself and what will keep you going, and when the routine that you're using becomes an obstacle. And if it does, switch. You know, there's no value in riding a dead horse or sticking with something if it's not working for you. The next question comes from Quinn.
Hi, Michael. My name is Quinn Peterson, and I encourage intentional commuting at biketoworkblog.com. As I look over my spotty history at journal writing, I'm struck by the question, who am I writing for? Michael, who do you envision your audience being when you write? Or do you? And do you think it matters? I look forward to hearing your answer. Thank you.
Quinn, I'm really journaling for myself. I've said it several times, but if you really want to get hung up and get stuck on your journaling, just start telling yourself this story. I'm blogging for posterity. Or this will be published in 100 years. Or my grandchildren will read this. and be astonished. No, I assume that it will never be found, that it's going to disappear when I die. And the value of that, and I'm going to get into this a little bit more in another answer to another question, but it enables me to be more honest and derive or distill the full benefit from the process of journaling. So I'm writing for an audience of one, and that's me. The next question comes from Linda.
Hi, Michael. This is Linda Kuhar, Women's Christian Life Coach from lindakuhar.com. And my question today is, when journaling, how do you keep your mind open so that you don't shift into writing for an audience or going into performance mode? Thank you so much, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, this question obviously is very similar to Quinn's. In fact, I got a ton of questions on this same topic area. But obviously, a lot of people get stuck at this point. And I think you have to make a decision early on and say to yourself, this will never be published. It's just for me. And what I've found is that this is just another way the resistance, in the Stephen Pressfield sense, the resistance shows up whenever you start something important or something significant. But I disregard it, and I write anyway. And over time, the voice gives up. And honestly, I rarely hear it anymore. I just don't hear that voice that encourages me that I'm writing for somebody else or that encourages me to go into performance mode. And by the way, the best way to defeat the resistance in whatever form it shows up is just to do what you know you should do anyway. Because the goal of the resistance is to keep you from accomplishing whatever it is that you set out to do. And it has two primary strategies, a lot of tactics, but two primary strategies: keep you from starting or get you to stop once you started. So the best way to countermeasure that or to counter it is simply to start and then keep going no matter what. And if you do that in whatever area of your life that you're trying to do something significant, you'll find that the voice of the resistance gets smaller and smaller. So I'm actually in the process of preparing a talk that I'm going to give at the Platform Conference here in a couple of weeks on overcoming the resistance, because I think everyone who's creative, everyone who writes, everyone who blogs, everyone who speaks, everybody who tries to take on something significant, they encounter the resistance. And I want to talk about that as a how you deal with that from a mindset standpoint and some countermeasures that you can employ to get past it to be productive. The last question comes from Sam.
Hey, Michael. This is Sam from easyjournaling.com, a website that focuses on keeping a personal journal on your smartphone, tablet, or PC. I've noticed that a lot of people think that using social media or blogging is the same as keeping a personal journal. What suggestions do you have to help convince my audience that there are greater benefits to be had from keeping a private journal than from just using Twitter, Facebook, or keeping a blog? Thank you so much.
Well, I think there are four benefits of keeping a private journal. Number one, you can be totally honest. Number two, you don't have to consider that you might be understood. You know, you don't have to really wordsmith it and make sure that you've dotted every I and crossed every T, because somebody may misunderstand and get offended in the future. And so I don't even worry about that because it's a private journal. Another advantage is you don't have to try and manage your image. I mean, this happens all the time when we're blogging or when we're in social media. I mean, I face the temptation all the time. How do I want to be perceived versus how I really am? But in a journal, you can set all that aside and you can just get really honest and be who you are. And then a fourth benefit to keeping a private journal, I think, is you don't have to close every loop. You know, when I blog, and maybe this is just me, but when I blog, I feel like it's got to be a complete package, that I can raise the question, but I need to answer it. I'm trying to offer solutions for people on my blog, but not in my journal. I don't have to close every loop. I don't have to feel pressured to do so. And there's probably some other benefits too, but I say, man, make it private. You'll benefit from it. So let me leave you with this question. Do you journal? And if so, what has been the primary benefit? I would love to hear from you. So you can go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/039, as in episode 39. Leave your comment, share it with the community, and let the rest of us benefit as well. Just a few quick announcements here as we get to the close. First, Platform University is going great, beyond my wildest expectations. We've now had in excess of 1,000 people join. And if you haven't done so yet, please check it out. If you're serious about building your platform this year, You couldn't make a better investment than becoming a member of Platform University. There, I said it. It's because I believe it. Each month, we offer four significant content components. And let me just describe these quickly for you. First of all is the masterclass. This is where I or another expert take you through some key part of platform building. This month, for example, I discussed the importance of starting with WOW, how to build WOW into your platform and into the products and services that you offer. And then we make this available as a video and an audio, so you can take it with you if you'd prefer to listen to it on the go. We also include a study guide with some key takeaways as well, because we want you to really grasp this and for it to make a difference in your life. Second component is a Q&A teleseminar. This is where I host a one-hour live teleconference and answer your specific questions about building a platform. We just had our first Q&A last night. We had hundreds of people on the call, and I got very, very specific in my answers. Third component, member critiques. Each month, our members volunteer to have me critique their site, and I pick one, and then I tell them the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the whole thing is recorded so that all of our members can benefit, so they can learn and they can improve. It's amazing how much you can learn just by watching a real live example and then applying it to your own situation. The fourth content component is the backstage pass. I'm really excited about this. This is where I take you behind the scenes, show you exactly how I do something. So this month, for example, I give you a tour of my workspace. You'll see my computer setup, my stand-up desk, my podcasting equipment, and I explain the rationale for where I have tried to engineer everything to optimize my productivity. Now, one of the most helpful benefits of Platform University is access to the members' discussion forum, and this is where you can pose questions, learn from the other members, and offer up your own success stories. And I also participate in the forums, answering questions wherever I think I have something of value. But again, if you haven't checked it out, go to platformuniversity.com. It's only $25 a month. I know I'm biased, but I think it's a steal. And if you want to build a platform, you can't afford not to do this. I don't know how to say it any more strongly, but platformuniversity.com, you at least owe it to yourself to check it out. Second announcement, we still have six tickets, yes, just six, left for the Platform Conference, which will be held here in Nashville on February the 11th through the 13th, just 2 weeks away. You can find out more at platformconference.tv. And the third announcement is that my next podcast will be on the topic of how to get out of that funk. I don't know where you live when you're listening to this, but in the U.S. where I live, it's winter. And that causes a lot of people to get the winter blues or to go into a funk. And I'm going to talk about how to get out of it on command whenever you find it necessary. So if you have a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or your website because I'll link to it just like I did here with the callers in this episode. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be so grateful if you'd rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. If you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com. Go to the show notes for this episode and scroll down to the comment section and let me hear from you. What did you like? What did you not like? Where can you offer value to the people that are also listening to the podcast? But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything?